This episode of the Android Central podcast is brought to you by MintSim, the best way to get cheap 4G LTE data in the U.S. Use offer code ACFREESHIP for free first-class shipping on any MintSim purchase. Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Android Central podcast. Today is July 13, 2017, and it's a special edition podcast because we're not just rambling about a bunch of random topics. We're actually going to focus and talk about one thing. Well, that is before we talk about one other thing that we are doing to follow up to last week. But before we get to that, we're going to introduce some people. This week, joining us again, welcome back to the podcast, Phil Nickinson. How are you, man?
Hey! It's like I never left, almost.
Yeah.
Well, I miss you guys.
You did leave, and you went to do your own thing, and you're a modern frickin' dad. That's just what it is.
I don't feel that modern.
Well, you have a bunch of echoes in your house, so that makes you modern, God. I guess.
You have no
idea. Including a one that takes photos, but we'll talk about that a bit later.
Yes.
Welcome, well, for the first time to the Android Central podcast, welcome, welcome, welcome. Micah Sargent, how are you?
I'm doing so great. I am happy to be here on the Android Central podcast. It's got a different flavor, I've already come to realize. So
yes,
this should be exciting.
Talk about you, Terry.
The pre-tape chatter, there was more than one swear word and an allusion to illegal things that will remain unsaid. But yeah, so Micah, before we sort of introduce the regular, hi Jerry, tell us a little bit about yourself. Where do you work? Because I know and Jerry knows and Phil knows, but maybe some people listening don't know.
Well, I'm an attorney who specializes in plausible deniability, and you actually just ruined that for us.
Sorry.
But when I'm not doing that, I am a senior editor at iMore. I write about home automation, pet technology, and occasionally about other things that happen to happen in the Apple and Apple-adjacent universe. And when I'm not doing that... Automated pets, exactly. That's the next step. And when I'm not doing that, I am talking on way too many podcasts.
Yes, you do co-host quite a few, and we'll talk about that a bit later. And hey, Jerry. No, I'm just kidding. How you doing, Jerry? Welcome back, Jerry Hildenbrand. How's it going?
Pretty good. How you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. So this week, we'll talk a little bit about the reason we have both Micah and Phil on. They are experts in their respective home automation / smart home speaker / a whole bunch of stuff that may not make sense to me and maybe people listening. So we'll get a bit more clarity on them. But first, we're going to talk a little bit about what we talked about last week. And that was the Google versus European Union snafu. We're going to do a bit of follow-up before we get to our main show. And the reason that we're doing that is because we received some feedback. Some people thought that, and rightfully so, that we didn't have all of our ducks in a row. And some of the feedback was productive, some wasn't. And one person left us a voicemail that got my brain a-turning, and I kind of want to play it, and I want everybody to talk about it for 5 minutes and get it off their chest, and then we'll move on. So hang on, let me just play this for you real quick.
Android Central, this is James from Louisville. I wanted to comment on your Google antitrust conversation. I want to point out that as far as the EU is concerned, Google is zero rating Android. They're leveraging their search money to give away free operating systems, and that operating system then feeds back into their search. Because remember, at the time this was filed, Gmail was part of the search system. Maps is obviously still is. You got all the different products, calendar, etc. So all that feeds into the search profiling. So for all that you get upset about the zero rating of different media services, Google's basically zero rating Android. It's kind of it's leveraging one income source to then give away something else free and control what's happening in the other environment and buy yourself into a second monopoly. So that's my take on it. This is James from Louisville. Love listening to the show. Bye.
He's going the right direction.
Right.
But I mean, we need to zero rating as we talk about it is different. That's what he's talking about is subsidizing. And that's what Google's always done, right? Search pays the bills. That's no different than something, the company that we all work for, taking our big source of income, which, you know, or any media company, let's not just use us, but, you know, ads and display ads, and using that money to help pay for something else that might or might not make money. That's business.
Yeah. I mean, what's interesting is, you know, we've been hearing a lot about zero rating in respect to what's happening with the FCC recently. You know, Ajit Pai, the new FCC chair, is pushing to repeal some of the consumer protections that were put on ISPs, you know, implementing Title II and making ISPs into telecommunication services, essentially the same as utilities, so that they can't do anything untoward. And zero rating is a term that we hear a lot when in relation to that, because T-Mobile, for instance, will not charge music streaming or movie streaming towards a person's monthly data cap if there is a data cap, if you're not on an unlimited plan. And that is called zero rating. And it kind of goes against the tenets of net neutrality to some extent. But I see where James is coming from here. Subsidizing is something that companies do all the time. I mean, if you look at Amazon, we're going to talk a lot about Amazon. Amazon subsidizes its, you know, money losing Prime Video service. It's investing billions of dollars into content from other parts of the company, right? I mean, Jerry, is what do you think? Is this something that is akin to zero rating, or is it more like subsidizing, as Phil was saying?
I think Amazon subsidizes their business on the dumb things I buy when I've drank too much. But that was supposed to be funny, and none of you laughed. I feel horrible.
It's hilarious.
Okay, thank you. I laughed.
We all feel guilty because we're all going, yeah, that's us too.
They're subsidizing the crap out of most of their services, not just Android. You can go a step further, and since they only exist from ad revenue, they don't have very many paid products, and the ones they do are mostly self-sustaining and not a profit-driven venture. They're subsidizing everything from ads, so they're not that much different from any other company or website on the internet. I just that's not quite the same as T-Mobile saying, well, we want you to use this service and we'll let you do it for free, but not this service.
No, I mean, the problem always comes down to Google saying, if you want to use our version of Android, you have to agree to all this other stuff. And the European Union, and they're not the first ones to say this, you know, says, no, that's wrong. You've gone too far.
But there's a very good reason that stuff needs to be installed. And that's the point I tried to make last week, is the way Android is now and without a fundamental change, a lot of that stuff has to be installed.
And I mean, and the question is that good business sense? Is that just good business strategy? Or is that a step too far and you are purposefully, you know, shutting everybody else out?
Maybe it's a step too far. I can agree with that. But at this point, changing it, I don't think people understand what's involved with changing it. And the end result of that would be a brand new app store with new APIs, and people with a Google Pixel or last year's Nexus get to use it, and everybody else is waiting for an update.
And you can argue it so many different ways, because I can say, well, if you don't like it, you can go in and download Android, you know, all the source files, compile them yourselves, and build your own thing. Well, that's really hard. Maybe it is, but China's done it. Amazon's done it. You know, any other number of examples.
You don't even have to go that far. When you can buy a phone off the shelf, and when you turn it on to set it up, you can just press no and not enter anything for Google and not use any of their stuff.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because a lot of people accuse the European Commission of unfairly going after Google. You know, they've looked at Microsoft, and we talked a little bit about the things that Microsoft was fined for back in the 90s. They looked at Apple and didn't really see any problem because Android has such a huge market share. You know, it's over 90% in some places. So, you know, I do understand that, you know, there is something to be said for, you know, Google's dominance, but at the same time, yeah, I don't know. It more comes down to, is Google shaking down OEMs in the EU by forcing them to include services that they don't want to include?
And another thing to remember is you're talking about European laws and not necessarily American laws. And maybe they're one-to-one and maybe they're not. So it's...
Right. Absolutely.
I have different thoughts on the technical aspects and then maybe the social, economic, and legal aspects. On the technical side, I think what they want is ridiculous, stupid, and they'll probably get part of it, and it just causes a bunch of unnecessary work for, you know, Google and everyone else. But I don't like Google having such a dominant place in the market. I wasn't comfortable, you know, before, and it just keeps growing and growing, and that's just not good. I want other companies to be able to show off their stuff and other people actually see them. You know, that's the problem when 90% of everything is Android. The guy who makes the next great thing has a really hard time of getting anyone to know about it.
Yeah, it's fair. I mean, I thought one of your points, Jerry, that you made that was really, really good that needs to be reinforced is that even if Play Music or Gmail or Maps or Chrome was not bundled with Android in the EU, all of those underlying technologies still need to be in Android because they are frameworks for every other app, you know, whether it's made by Apple or Microsoft or any other OEM or any other company, right? And if Verizon or T-Mobile in the UK wants to bundle an app on a phone, it's basically using Google Play services, and you can't avoid that.
Well, I mean, you can avoid it, but you don't get...
Right, you can, but you have to build your own replacement.
You cannot say, well, I want to be able to use Gmail, but I don't want Google Search and or Hangouts and or whatever random Google app you can think of installed, because Gmail doesn't work without a bunch of that stuff.
Yeah, this is going to go on for a very long time. Google has 90 days, or they haven't even been formally charged yet for this particular thing. But they have 90 days to respond to the other $2.7 billion fine that was levied against them. And this is going to go on for a very long time. I mean, we first heard about this fine back in like 2014 or 2013. So, yeah, anyway.
They're looking all under right. Sergey's couch to collect the
$2.7 billion. It's all there.
Yeah, they may need to call in the big guns, Eric Schmidt. All right, so let's move on. Let's talk about, you know, smart homes. Let's talk about home automation. Let's talk Google Home. Micah, you have taken it upon yourself to sort of dive into all of the smart home platforms, I guess. Mm-hmm. Although I hope you haven't had the displeasure of using Samsung smart things, because I heard it's pretty terrible.
Yeah, I tend to stay away from pretty much everything that that doesn't, like, in terms of the thing that I want to kind of envelop all of the technology that I have in my home. I want it to be reliable, and so that's kind of been basing it around the three big companies in the space right now, which are Google, Apple, and Amazon. And they've yet to disappoint, actually, all three of them. There's been a lot of growing going on.
Okay, so tell us what your home system looks like. What how does it break down?
Well, it looks like privilege. so we'll get that out of the way first. I've got, you know, a dozen Philips Hue light bulbs in my house. I've got some Wi-Fi connected plugs from iDevices, which makes one of the best connected plugs that you can buy. Oh, I've got KooGeek plugs as well. I've got some Lutron Caseta switches, which are actually in-wall switches, and I don't know, some other things as well. Basically, any sort of different category for smart home technology have got something in that space. contact sensors, motion sensors, temperature sensors. We've got the Nest Cam and also a HomeKit-enabled camera, the August doorbell, et cetera, et cetera. Again, privilege. And then to run it all, I have, of course, Siri on my phone. I've also got the Google Assistant built into the Google Home that I have. And I've got a couple Echo devices throughout the house. Now, I don't use all of them all of the time, obviously. Most of the reason that I have those different smart assistants is to test them and to see how they compare and to be able to, you know, understand how they work and their downfalls and what makes them better sometimes than the other ones. And I'm the type of person who would rather fiddle with things with my fingers than have to use my voice to control things. I'm still stuck in the past, but my partner is absolutely like all in on the A word that I don't know if they want me to say it here, or if you're gonna have to bleep it out. So we'll go with Amazon's voice assistant. He uses that all the time to control lights and stuff around the house. I will occasionally use Siri to do light changes and things like that. But again, I find that the control that I have with my hand is much better, and I'm less likely to be disappointed by something not working. So there is a Google Home in my office. It sits behind me, and I do ask it about my day every morning. And then I've got an Echo in the living room and an Echo in the bedroom. And then also I've got the latest Ecobee thermostat, which I know Phil just loves, and it has Alexa built in. So yeah, I mean, all of those devices, and happy to answer any questions that anyone has on those things.
That's a nice start you got there.
I was gonna say, okay, Phil, you got
one up me. Let's hear about it.
Actually, no, I'm pretty comparable, I think. Okay, so I'm not gonna say how many Google Homes are in my house, but it's more than one. I've lost
less
track.
Than 12.
It's less. it's fewer than 12. Amazon's the big one for me right now, just because the Echo mm-hmm. Show came out. But I mean, I've got like the original Echo that I reviewed for AC like 2 years ago. I can't believe it's that old. I've got a smattering of Dots just because I kind of have a habit of buying them every now and then. I actually just kind of hand them out as Christmas presents to any family members who doesn't have one yet.
Wasn't that your band in high school too? A smattering
Echo Dot?
Of Dots?
Yes. That's actually a really good band name. let's see. I've got a Nest thermostat that I'm actually about to get rid of. We can talk about why in a minute if you want. I've got the latest generation Nest Cam, not the IQ one. And what else? Oh, my favorite. And Micah, you got to get this. Ring doorbell. Love it.
Best thing ever.
Best thing ever. I've got their stick-up cam in the backyard.
Nice.
I wanted to try it. So a whole bunch of Philips Hue lights, because, yeah, once you try one, you kind of want them everywhere. I've got them in a few places where I shouldn't put them. Man, what else? I don't know. I lose track. But yeah, Echo Show was the new latest and greatest. And okay. It's weird because I bounce back and forth. I do a lot of stuff with Google Home, especially in the kitchen, just because I think Chromecast is the greatest protocol in the past 5 years, probably. And I hate Bluetooth with a passion. So I keep one in the kitchen just for that, so I can listen to podcasts while I'm cooking.
Okay, so I'm curious. Micah, you have three separate ecosystems. You know, for what's really interesting is, you know, we don't have HomePod yet, and we'll get to that a bit later. HomePod is Apple's upcoming Siri powered speaker, but we do have HomeKit, we have Siri, and they work together fairly well. And you mentioned that, you know, it's easy and it's useful having your phone on you at all times. You know, you don't, if you're not in the same room as an Echo or a Google Home, you can always just pull out your phone and ask Siri to do something. But which one have you found to be kind of the most seamless to set up? You know, this is Android Central Podcast, but like, by all means, if Apple does something right and better, I want you to be as honest as you can. Because it's important. Like, we want to hold Google and Amazon to account for what they're doing not as well as Apple, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay, here's what I'm going to say first of all. For the people who actually, like, do use iOS devices every day, what seemed to happen is back when HomeKit first came out, people, especially the noisier, more early adoptee type people that everybody else seems to kind of listen to, tried it out and it was crap. And they still have that perspective in their mind. They're stuck thinking that HomeKit of whatever years ago is HomeKit of today. And I have to say that there have been major improvements to HomeKit. If you have Apple TV devices in your home especially, HomeKit is incredible because those Apple TV devices work, and so do iPads. Any iPad that you have in your house works as basically a relay device. And so even whenever you're out of the home and you want to control something, your phone sends a signal to your iPad, you know, over your internet connection or to your Apple TV, and the Apple TV or iPad then sends out the necessary, hey, turn off the lights, bozo, or turn on the lights, bozo.
Yeah, and, actually, hang on. Let me interrupt you. Sorry, but let's back up and remember how all this stuff works. So you have some devices that talk directly to the internet, right? They go directly from the device to your router. The Ring doorbell is a good example of that, right? So, and then you have things that don't. Philips Hue needs a hub to talk to the internet. The August doorbell has to have a hub if you want it to talk to the internet. Now, August is an interesting one because you can buy your own hub from them if you want, or it can work directly through an Apple TV, which is how mine's working. And so like some of my devices can talk to it directly and some can't. So that's where I think Apple has done a really good thing with Apple TV and allows it to serve as that hub a la Smart Things or a la, you know, just a dedicated hub for each device. Sorry.
That's dead on. The one other thing that I'd say in terms of kind of all of it is it wasn't too long ago before I started to just go back to just tapping things with my hand. And I still am. I'm very impressed with Amazon in terms of its reliability and its, responsiveness on controlling things. So I have actually, in the past, you know, when I was talking to Siri and asking it to turn on and off the lights, there were periods of time where, you know, something would go wrong and it didn't happen. Something was weird and I was unhappy, of course. But I could always count on Android's smart assistant to be able to turn on and off the lights. Now, again, over time, all of these are improving and I really have started to see major parity between all of them. And you know, they're all kind of growing into their own platforms and doing a really good job of being able to connect things. But yeah, I think the one other thing about Apple is that because you have those, you know, Bluetooth devices and stuff like that in your home, automations tend to be better because they are on the local network. And so if you have automations set up where you have a motion sensor senses something, and that means turn on a light, that's all happening locally. It's communicating with the hubs and stuff like that and passing those connections along. Whereas if you're using something like IFTTT, for those who don't know, if this, then that, or then that, that's having to go and talk to the internet, and then the internet talks to this, and then talks to that, and then finally, you know, the change happens. So there can be a bit more of a delay there. So in terms of being local and more responsive, I think Apple is headed in the right direction, and I would love to see Google and Android kind of grow into those spaces a little more where they do stuff locally and become even more of a hub type system.
Jerry, I'm thinking here, everybody has a router. You know?
Yep.
And Google even tried this to some extent with Google On Hub and trying to make the On Hub a conduit to, you know, a smart home. And it never really took off. I mean, I think that's because Google Home was always in the cards. But I'm just wondering, like, is the router not something that just is waiting to be this central point? You know, this one single thing that would work with every platform, every ecosystem around.
Do you talk to the same people in Central California that I talk to?
Maybe.
Yeah,
I don't know.
That is a brilliant idea. And because it's a brilliant idea, there are people thinking about how that could be done. I don't think they're to the point where it's going to be universal because we can't. As long as companies like Philips and Google and Apple and Waymo and everybody else want to, you know, use what they think is best instead of a central standard, we're not ready for universal stuff just yet, unfortunately. But a router that can handle all the traffic and signals on the right network style and type that we need for the stuff today is in people's minds.
And Phil, like, Almond is a company, Securify, rather, is a company that did this or tried to do this. It shipped a couple versions of its Almond and Almond Plus routers a couple years ago, had integrated Zigbee and Z-Wave, and, you know, other smart home standards, I guess, that haven't quite taken off because proprietary tends to win. But, you know, there have been examples of it, just nothing that's been considerably mainstream.
Correct.
You know, I think the company that has the best chance to do this, and I hope they're thinking about it, is Samsung, because
Smart Home Connect is a thing.
Yeah, they already have the basics for the automation part down, and it works fairly well with the right equipment, and they're surely capable of building a router. I would like to see maybe, you know, a router that runs Android with Google Home capabilities and SmartThings, Zigbee, Z-Wave, the whole nine yards. Do it, Samsung.
Well, I mean, they've already started trying to imitate Google Wi-Fi with the smart home, yep. Samsung smart home. So we'll see how good that is. But Micah, I'm curious. So, you know, you have a Google Home, you have an Echo, you have soon a HomePod. Which one do you decide to talk to? You know, is it just that you have more rooms than you have devices, so you spread an Echo here and a Google Home there? Like, how do people know whether or not to, I mean, we're all the definition of privilege, but people who do have the opportunity to get a couple different smart home speakers, mm-hmm. or whatever the next iteration is, how do they decide? Do they get one of each? Do they just double up on one from the same ecosystem?
Well, okay, so I'm actually going to, I will hopefully share these links in the show notes. I've got some articles that kind of compare how each of them are, including HomePod, the Google Home, and the Amazon Echo. But honestly, the reason that I have all of them is, again, because I want to test them all. But I don't think that it's necessary to own each of the different devices, because
it's actually worse.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. As it stands right now,
things break. Yeah,
they all can do pretty much what you need them to do. And if they can't, then it's not going to be long before they can. Because if you'll notice, you know, Amazon will announce something that they're doing, and then shortly after, Google says, oh, by the way, the Google Home can do that now. And an example of that is on Amazon Echo, you can connect to it as a Bluetooth speaker, and Google Home is going to be rolling that out soon. Some of you lucky ducks got it early as an accident, and I'm jealous of you. I'm waiting for that to happen. And the same applies, you know, for, well, not the Bluetooth, but the same applies for the eventual HomePod in terms of communication. One of the interesting things about getting HomeKit enabled accessories is that 9 times out of 10, if not 9.5 times out of 10, you can count on that accessory to also work with at least the Amazon Echo and likely also with the Google Home. And so if you kind of buy into one ecosystem, and like if you're an Apple user primarily, which I know Android people out there are like, no, I'm not, then go with HomeKit enabled accessories, because if you want to get an Echo or something like that to add to your home, chances are you're going to be able to use Amazon's assistant to communicate with it. Now, in terms of how I decide, I have honestly found that because of the beamforming microphones and Amazon's design, it is the best way to use voice to control. And so that's what I end up using. You know, whenever you're kind of faced with continual letdowns, and that had happened with Siri a few times, then you stop, you know, relying on those and counting on them to be able to do what you need them to do. And here's the deal. When the Echo came out, the Echo did not have a screen. There was no screen. And so Amazon said, look, we have to develop a smart assistant that can't always rely on just saying, here's what I found on the web for you, because there's no screen to do that. And so they really focused that technology and said, we have to be able to answer more questions as much as possible and do a good job of answering questions or you know, doing whatever it is that the person wants to have done. instead of just going, here's what I found on the web for you. And it's only, you know, I think it's on rare occasions that we hear, I can't help you with that, or I don't know the answer to that question or what that happens to be. So it's, I think it's a really powerful technology that sometimes Siri and the Google Assistant can kind of rely on the screen and just say, hey, here's what I searched and found.
Let's back up a little bit and talk about how all this works, right? So instead of applications running on an Echo or on HomeKit or any of that, yeah, I mean, it's all APIs. All a skill is an API, an application programming interface, right? It's a way for your thing to talk to this thing. And skills, when they started out, and this is what I said originally with the first Echo, was like, cool, all right, they're here. I get how they work. They don't really do all that much, and they're somewhat limited. They've certainly gotten better over time, and they had to. So, yeah, that's where we are now, and we essentially have a tablet bolted onto these speakers. I mean, it's a display. It's a touchscreen. It can show you things. It can do things, but that's the problem right now. It doesn't actually do that much. It can show you a lot. In fact, I saw a little thing last night, and I wish I'd been quick to get a picture of it. It said, it flashes up little lines of, you know, things you can tell Echo Show to do. And it says, tell Echo Show to tell you this thing. I'm like, why am I telling it to tell me something? It should be showing me things. It should be doing more with video, and why the hell is it not a tablet? That's what it comes down to. It's this weird amalgamation of voice. The voice directions on a visual platform, and it's driving me nuts. It will get better. I think they'll figure it out. I really kind of think this is a Trojan horse to get the Fire OS and sort of Fire tablet type things into every home.
But isn't it already in every home? Amazon already has so many, Fire HDs in American homes. Isn't this trying to be something different? It's probably running Fire OS.
Oh, I'm sure it is, yeah.
You know, but it's obfuscating a lot of the complexity on purpose. But the one thing that I find really interesting is that in your review, you mentioned that it does not have, it's not proactive. It does not give you the information that it thinks you need. And that is something that a screen can do that a speaker can't or shouldn't. Because every time you walk into a room, if the Echo went, hey Phil, by the way, do you know that NPR just came out with this, or the traffic's really bad on the I-9, this is something that would piss me off. I would never want that. Or at least,
yeah. So here's another example of that. I wake up this week and it's thunderstorming at 6 a.m. as it's prone to do in Florida. First thing I want to do is see the radar. I can't see the radar, so I have to grab a phone or a tablet and can't do it on this perfectly good Echo Show that's sitting right there ready to go. I think they will eventually sort of merge between, I think we're going to have more visual skills to start with, right? They're going to have to do more with that, but it's going to be really interesting to see when a skill becomes an application again, and I think we're going to see this weird merging of the two.
I mean, to some extent, what's interesting to me is that what makes up so much of Android today is an API. You know, there's mm-hmm. very little about Android that is an out-and-out app. A lot of what Google Assistant does is it taps into a lot of other Google APIs. It's just a front end for the knowledge graph. It's a front end for so much of what Google has basically done disparately for the last 10 years. It's bringing it all into one place. Amazon doesn't have those native services. It just doesn't offer nearly as much as Google. So the API to Amazon is the most important thing, except for Prime Video and all the other kind of media-based services that Amazon offers. So my question to you is the show more, is it too much for most people? I mean, are we moving in the direction where Amazon just said, we need to put a screen on an Echo because we need to move it into a new phase? Or does it actually have a five-year plan for, this is the Echo of the future that we're putting out today, the way that in many ways the Echo of 2014 didn't really mature until mid-2016?
Oh, no. I think Amazon is playing the long game in all things. And you know, you just have to know a little bit about Jeff Bezos to know that. I think adding a display is a logical progression. I think it's the right one. I think it's a smart one. The timing, and I always surprise myself with this, but when you see a product come out that looks really promising and then it doesn't do everything you expect it should do at first, I was a little surprised to see something like the Ring doorbell, which they named as a launch partner, was just half-assed. It was, you know, I can tell it to turn on the camera on my front door, but that's it. But when somebody actually comes up to the door and rings the bell, it doesn't pop open and say, hey, look, there's somebody there. This is not a whole home hub yet. It's not showing me, you know, it sort of shows me live messaging through Amazon messaging, right? But it doesn't have WhatsApp built in, or it doesn't have the hooks for WhatsApp. It doesn't have hooks for Facebook Messenger or, you know, any other protocol that somebody uses. So it's missing a lot. That's not to say it can't get it. But there are a lot of holes there still. But no, and it makes total sense, and you have to take that long view of it.
So when we heard, when Amazon first announced Echo, there weren't as many smart home providers out there to hook into. Now we have myriad providers, and Echo works with most of them. But it launched first without a lot of support, and Apple, on the other hand, it thought that it did HomeKit right. It thought that it had enough partners to launch HomeKit properly. And then all of a sudden, it realized that it didn't. And then it just delayed the crap out of it.
Well, and you have to remember, a big part of HomeKit is this hardware aspect. There has to be this specific little piece of hardware in a HomeKit-capable product that other things don't have to have. That's a problem Philips Hue ran into because they didn't want to bake it into their hub. And obviously you can't just go back and retrofit all these hubs that everybody's already bought. And at the end of the day, you're talking APIs, but HomeKit from a user perspective really doesn't act or look any different. You have this cool little thing in the control center of your iPhone and iPad. And I think they've done a really good job with that. But if what I've bought doesn't work with it, it kind of doesn't matter. I have this home folder. Where's my Pixel? I have this home folder that literally says home on it. What's in there? Nest, Ring Hue, Google Wi-Fi, Google Home, iRobot, Sonos, HealthMate, Harmony, Rachio, Ecobee, Natatmo, Canary, August, Alexa. I think I'm missing something because I just reset this phone. And out of all those, I think I have like one. I set off my own Alexa here in the office. Out of all those, I think I have one, maybe two that actually talk to HomeKit. So either everything, I think Micah said it right. Either you buy things with the intention of using it with HomeKit, or you accept the fact that you're just going to have to use a lot of stuff without it.
And I think it's going to get better because, yeah, in the beginning, you had to have the certain hardware. And on top of that, you had to have an Apple-approved manufacturing facility. And if it wasn't one of those, then you couldn't get HomeKit approved. And on top of that, then you had to send the device. And of course, this is all just reportedly and allegedly and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, multiple sources confirmed, blah, blah, blah. You also had to send it off to their testing facilities. And every time you did a firmware upgrade, you also had to send it off again and wait for them to finish testing it. And the worst part about this is if you were a company making a device for HomeKit, a HomeKit enabled accessory, you were not allowed to talk about the process at all. And so that meant that if you had, you know, worked with Apple and you had proven that you were going to be, you know, coming out with a HomeKit enabled blah, 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 then you could say that. But that was the end of it. And so August is a perfect example of this. August makes a smart lock that is HomeKit enabled, but they also make a doorbell that they announced a long time ago was going to be HomeKit enabled. I have that on the front of my house, and it's great. Not HomeKit enabled yet, but in the works. And I kid you not, most of their support responses on Twitter are just, eventually it's going to have HomeKit capabilities, da 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 da, over and over and over and over and over again, because that's all they can say. They can't say how far along they are and how soon it's going to be happening. So yeah, Apple chose this, trying to be more safe and to also be more compatible with things. And in doing so, they really did limit, especially in the beginning, how much that was going to happen. But now, Apple is they've kind of expanded their ruling a little bit, and so there's actually software verification that they're doing now. And so older accessories, and I'm thinking specifically of something like Nest, which I'm sure Nest will never will, but Nest and some of the earlier Waymo devices could, in theory, now do the software verification instead of having to do the hardware verification. And that would allow those accessories that are already in people's home to become HomeKit-enabled accessories.
Wait a second.
Go ahead.
So the Philips Hue that I just replaced today, the round hub that I just replaced with the exact same square equivalent that has a HomeKit frickin' thing on the bottom, it's not necessary?
No, that's not the case. It's not that it's not necessary, because you still have to meet Apple's, you know, specific guidelines, but you don't have to have, there's like this special chip that's some sort of secure enclave, blah, 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 blah. And that's no longer required, because that was like the verification piece. And so if go ahead.
No, blah, 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 blah. Don't excuse, you know, that hurts inside.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The hardware verification is an awesome thing, because you're sending a lot of personal details over, you know, an encryption or unencrypted line. It's just as easy to crack as Bluetooth.
But this is all, I mean, it's a bunch of nerds listening to this and a bunch of nerds talking about it. But for normal people out there, what the hell? This is ridiculous. It should just work.
Right. It should just work. But I kind of like the way they're doing it. Let's not.
Yeah. And let me be clear. I agree with you on that. I think that the way that Apple went about this is very important. And I guess like me and saying blah, blah, blah is not to dismiss it, but instead to say that I don't have all of the details and I don't want to get those wrong. But Apple is being way, you know, has been way more secure and has done this thing a certain way in the past. And now going forward, they are able to open it up a little bit more, where they can do software verification that says, okay, your stuff is very secure. You may not have made it with our exact specifications, but that's okay, because we're able to test it and see that it is secure up to our standards. And so you're going to be able to use, or rather to market it as a HomeKit-enabled product. So to answer your question, Daniel, I don't think that Philips is going to suddenly say, okay, let's go back to that old hub. Like I think they're all in on the new hub, because there are other improvements that came with that hub, like being able to support more lighting, and you know, the old hub was getting stale. So eventually you would have probably had to buy the new one anyway. And I don't see Philips kind of like rolling back to the other one and saying, all right, let's use this one as well. But something like Waymo, where they're not going to change the design of like the first plug that they made that's really popular, I think that's where this is particularly helpful and can get more people kind of into the HomeKit ecosystem.
Right. But Jerry, so as you said, this hardware verification is important, because you are establishing a secure connection between a piece of hardware and the Internet of Things, quote unquote, and right, your smart home hub or your phone or whatever is doing the transferring. But is that saying that what Google and Amazon are doing is inherently less secure, or are they just finding another way through, you know, software verification to do it just as securely?
Well, they have another way to do it, and quite frankly, yes, it's less secure. That doesn't mean it's not secure enough. Apple's new method of software verification, that can be done, and it can be just fine. And right now, it doesn't matter too much, because I mean, if somebody's sitting inside your house with the equipment to intercept these signals and crack the password to your porn accounts or whatever, you know they're there. But when this gets bigger and you include doing it over the internet, that's when encryption becomes very important. But I don't really know 100% how Google and or Amazon encrypt the traffic and, you know, keep it secure. But software can be good enough.
So, Phil, one thing that I've encountered, and I don't have as robust a collection of smart home gadgets as you or Micah, but one thing that I've encountered is that there is no standard for communication between whatever you're doing, whether it's with your phone or with the smart home speaker. And I think to, you know, I have a first generation Kivo or Kwikset Kivo smart lock that uses Bluetooth. I have a Nest and Nest Cam, which does use Bluetooth for establishing a connection, but then uses Wi-Fi. I have some things that use Zigbee, some things that use Z-Wave, but I'm not sure which are which. I have a whole bunch of different things, and you kept bringing it up. It should just work. It should just work. And I'm wondering, you know, Google launched support for, I think it's Thread with its with Google Wi-Fi, or mm-hmm. was that another product? And Thread was supposed to be a, you know, something that was going to bridge all of these gaps, but nothing supports Thread yet.
You want to know a secret?
Oh, sorry, it's not Thread. It's Eero. The new Eero supports Thread.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so Phil, what's the secret?
The secret is I have no idea what runs Zigbee and what Z-Wave and what... Yeah, I have purposefully ignored any talk of protocols. Either they work with Amazon Alexa or they work with Google Home or they work with HomeKit. If they don't, the protocols are for somebody else to deal with. Protocols are for developers. They're not for me. They're not for my wife. They're not for my kids. Either the product itself works or it doesn't. I'm getting old. I'm simple. Yeah.
I like that. I like that. There is also the, oh goodness, I can't even think. The Wink Hub actually offers Thread support built in, as well as, you know, Zigbee and Z-Wave and Zoodle and Zopper and Zingy. But they,
I think you made that last one up.
I may have. We'll never know. Somebody should create it. Yeah, it supports Thread as well. Thread is like Google and a few other companies getting together and trying to finally make, you know, the one thread to rule them all. And again, it's probably just going to be another type of protocol for connection. But I like the idea when we're talking about, you know, not being these tech heads, but instead being people who help consumers figure out the technology that they want and how to make their lives better, to base it around the products that they're going to add to their home. And so we say, here's this product and here's what works with it, as opposed to going, oh yes, this Philips Hue bulb supports Zigbee and you're definitely going to want it in your house. Nobody cares or needs to know what Zigbee is. That's for developers to worry about or manufacturers to worry about. I like that.
I need you to do all the Android Central podcast ad reads in that voice, please.
It'll cost you extra, but sure.
I'm gonna pause there, and I'm gonna have you tell us a little bit about Thrifter, because
they're
a sponsor for this week, and they just came off a killer week, giving us everything that we needed to know about the Amazon Prime Day. What did you all buy, by the way, on Prime Day, Micah? What did you indulge in?
Okay, well, let's see if we're going to do this voice. So Thrifter helped me buy some very interesting things for my little puppies, you know. I saw that I could get a little duck. Okay, I'm not going to do that anymore. There was a duck that was on sale, like a squeaky toy, and I actually had to talk to the Echo to get it. And so I had to say, hey, person, order a squeaker toy. And
amazing.
Did you find it
on Thrifter, or was this something that you...
No, this was Thrifter, because Thrifter did this awesome thing where they were not only live blogging, but also live tweeting all of the deals. And so I'd pop into my Twitter feed, and Thrifter was right there with all of the things that I needed to purchase. And basically, Thrifter is the place where I go to to spend money that I probably don't need to spend. But in the end, as Jerry mentioned, you know, I was happy doing it because my puppers were so thrilled. I think that the cool thing about Thrifter, and something that we had talked about before on iMore show, is that it's not just like every single silly deal that exists out there, but it's genuinely stuff that people can use and would find helpful. So that includes things like, you know, chargers, or in my case on Prime Day, getting that duck that I know my dogs are happy to have.
Well, I'm so happy your dog's got the little duck. The one thing that that I'm looking at right now was posted on Thrifter earlier today, maybe of interest, the Moto G5 Plus is now available for $250 for the 64 gig version. And that's one of my favorite mid-range devices. And, you know, you can see that kind of deal. You can see all different kinds of tech and non-tech deals, how to sign up for the best retailer rewards programs, which retailer gives you the best deals when you spend there on a regular basis. I didn't know this, but Walgreens, yeah, pretty good. So who knows? Anyway, if you want to learn more about it, sign up for their email newsletter. Go to thrifter.com, and we thank them for their sponsorship.
Thrifter.com. Right, so,
thanks, Phil. Not quite this. So let's talk a little bit about choices. So, you know, I mentioned this earlier. You know, we have both ecosystems, but for the average person listening to Android Central podcast, I mean, generally the people listening are going to be entrenched in the Google ecosystem, but Amazon is Google adjacent, right? It's not necessarily a completely different thing. So Phil, would you recommend the Echo or the Echo ecosystem over Google Home, or is it like if you're a Google user, you have to buy a Google Home?
I don't think you have to. I think ultimately it's a better product, especially it just has more robust search and can find things better. You know, it ties directly into your Google account. So if you're a big Google account user, you've got that going for you. But look, you cannot tell somebody to not buy a $40 or $50 Echo Dot to get their feet wet with this. I think that's where you start. And then if you want to start playing around with things, you know, maybe you get a Google Home on sale a little later. I think that's going to be the biggest hurdle for HomePod is it's a really expensive speaker, and I'm sure it's going to be a really good speaker. It's a lousy way to enter into the connected home space because that's a lot of money. I think, I really think Echo Dot is just a game changer in that respect.
So why is that? Is it because it just gives you access to everything Echo does, but without the cool sounding speaker?
Yeah, totally. And if you want a cool sounding speaker, you plug it in or you connect with this Echo plugin. I forget. Echo Dot, that is. Or you connect over Bluetooth. So yeah, it's absolutely an option, and it's only $50 to get in the game.
Yeah, so Dot has the headphone jack on the back, so you can plug an external thing into it.
So Micah, let's talk a little bit about the higher end of the market. We know that Sonos, one of our favorite speaker companies, is coming out with Alexa integration later this year. I believe it's in beta right now, but I'm not allowed to say that. So sorry, Sonos. And you know, this is something that we've been hearing about for months, the potential integration of the Amazon Echo with Sonos so that you can augment the middling quality of the Amazon Echo speaker to, you know, a Play One or a Play Five or, you know, one of those amazing sounding speakers. I mean, is this like, is Sonos something that you might want to recommend, even though, you know, we have all of these other smart home speakers?
Okay. this is the interesting thing to me. This is where we get a little too bubbly, I think, as tech people, because when I visit home on the rare occasion that I do, and I look around and I see my siblings and, you know, my mom and other members of my family listening to things, they're watching TV through the crappy speakers that are built into the back of the television. They're listening to music on earpods, and no, not AirPods, earpods, and crappy Beats, and they are listening in, you know, some like Amazon Basics Bluetooth speaker. I really feel like the larger swath of the population does not give two, you know, flying figs about super high fidelity, 7 tweeters and 12 subwoofers and 6 mice and 3 rats. Like they don't care about all that stuff that's makes the audio apparently sound like it's tickling your inner ear. It's just about getting to hear whatever it is that they want to listen to. And, you know, it sounds blown out to somebody who knows what they're talking about or rather knows what they're listening to. But when, you know, my sibling is like in the shower and wanting to listen to music, I don't think that he cares that, you know, he's got some white tater tot out in the hallway that's like putting 3D sounds around him, and that's the HomePod. So if you are a person who does care about these things and can tell the difference between, you know, a really good pair of headphones versus having earpods in your ears, then yeah, maybe Sonos is how you kind of bridge the gap. You get your wireless music listening throughout your home, and you get it in high quality. But I, despite having the expensive pair of headphones and some like Bose stuff in the house, I am okay most of the time with just using the Echo as is with the speaker that's built into it. And if I'm going to be completely honest, a lot of the time I'm just listening through the really crappy speaker on the bottom of my iPhone. I'm carrying it around my house and listening to the speaker there. So,
to be fair, that's a really good speaker on the bottom of the iPhone.
This is true. It's pretty good quality. I mean, it gets pretty loud, but like in comparison with, you know, your beamforming HomePod and stuff like that, and the Sonos multi-room system, like I have a multi-room sound system. It's called putting my iPhone in my back pocket and walking around with it. And that's fine for me. So I guess what I'm saying is, like, for people out there, especially if you're kind of going, should I buy blah, blah, or should I buy blah, blah, just consider that maybe it's not necessary. And if you're, you know, if you're happy with what you have, then stick with it. And I know that can kind of be difficult, but it's...
Pick an ecosystem. No, you're totally right.
Jerry...
Nonsense to both of you. Just nonsense. Everybody needs to buy a house full of Chromecast audios and bookshelf amps and speakers and have the music good in every room, and then go home and do the same for your parents.
So
we'll listen to these guys.
Jerry, here's my living room right now. I've got an Android TV, like it's built into the TV, which is another layer of complexity. I've got a Vizio soundbar that has Chromecast built into it, so I can Chromecast into the soundbar directly, or I can use Google Play Music or whatever through the TV. I've got a Sonos Play 5 under that, just because why the hell not? I've got a Chromecast audio plugged into the Sonos Play 5 for the rare occasion that I want to play something through Chromecast into a Sonos for the sheer absurdity of it. There's the original Echo is out in the living room as well. Like, it's insane. But the question then is, when my wife wants to play music, how does she do it? And she does it through the path of least resistance, which for her is going to be Sonos. Sonos is still the easiest way to do good audio throughout a house. As much as I love Chromecast, as much as I think AirPlay is super easy to use, yeah, Sonos is the path of least resistance there.
I have to agree. It's good enough for 90% of the people, and it's just dead easy.
So you know what's become much easier? So my wife also kind of uses her iPhone to listen to everything. I mean, she walks around the house and listens to podcasts. But when she wants to sit down and listen to music, it's actually the receiver that we bought a couple of years ago that has Spotify Connect support. So it shows up in Spotify as a, you know, as a potential connected device, and it has some weird name like RX475. And once it does that, you tap the button in Spotify, and it automatically goes to the right input on the receiver, and it just starts playing out of our, you know, powered speakers. And that has been like the default. I mean, we have a Google Home, we have an Echo, we have a Play 5 in that room. And that is not the way that we tend to listen to music, which is kind of interesting. But I mean, that also goes along with another layer, right? Spotify Connect or AirPlay. I mean, these are all sort of layers on right below the hardware that allow you to push audio or video to whatever sources you can connect to.
Please plug a Chromecast audio into that receiver, and then your wife can grab her phone and anything she wants to listen to, she can just hit the cast button and it'll play on your wonderful speakers through your good receiver.
How does what app does your wife use to listen to podcasts?
Pocket Casts.
All right, well, that's the correct answer.
It is, but, yes.
But mine does not. And I guess I could, you know, make her get on Pocket Cast like a good husband would.
But here's the thing. The Chromecast audio wouldn't automatically change the input.
Right.
Oh. And that is a step that she doesn't want to take. And it sounds simple, but it's
so
it
if
won't
I want to use the Chromecast through the Play 5, I have to go into the Sonos app first and tell it to use that input.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, there's that one, like it's so easy to get put off.
It's the internet of crap, right? Like it all yeah. does. It's those edge cases that get you. That's why I have a Google Home and Sonos in my bedroom, because I can't use Pocket Cast to listen to podcasts in the bedroom if I'm on the exercise bike. So I use, you know, Google Home to do that. And it's just these stupid, weird little edge cases that it won't do, and it drives me nuts.
Thank you, Ifit and Logitech, because my wife just says, you know, okay, keyword, hot word, play me the Rolling Stones, and the receiver turns on, it switches outputs, the speakers fire up, and the music plays.
Yeah.
But that was a lot of legwork.
Exactly.
That's the bad part. That took me a day of setting up to make it so my wife can just tell her phone to play some music.
And that's us knowing what we're doing.
Right. Mm-hmm. The average person is never going to do this.
Okay. So, Micah, talking about average person. So, Apple introduces... No, seriously.
Micah is way above average. I'm sorry.
No, you are the best of the best. You are the creme de la creme.
I'm leaving.
You're the best average person we know.
you're the top chihuahua. You really
there
are.
There we go. Aw, my heart.
So HomePod. This is interesting to me, right? Because I mean, Apple is no stranger to entering a market at a higher price. But the HomePod, even I heard Apple enthusiasts sort of squirming a little bit at this $400 price, especially since there is no prospect or very little prospect of it supporting other music services or even being compatible with the, you know, swath of APIs that Google Home and Alexa are. So what's your take on it?
So I don't know if you've ever seen that Chrissy Teigen GIF or GIF, depending on how you pronounce it, of her just like grimacing. It's like that fake smile where you're just in so much pain. But that's like this. Every time someone brings up the HomePod, I just get that feel in my heart. The HomePod is a disappointment to me. And I know it's early and everybody tells me like, hey, you might give it some time because in December it might be different from what it is today. Sure, but what are we if not hot takers? And so my hot take right now is that HomePod... Like that list that hopefully we'll include in the show notes shows you kind of the comparisons between the different devices that Google Home supports. You know, I didn't start with okay. Why are you listening to me? that it supports all of these different musical services as well as because it's a Chromecast device as well. And then the Amazon Echo supporting a bajillion plus its Bluetooth. Then we go to HomePod, and it is an Apple Music speaker, and that is how Apple is marketing it. And so I don't see that in and of itself changing until, you know, long after it's already come out. So maybe in like number two, it will be that. But right now, Apple is marketing this as an extension of Apple Music. And so that means that that's the primary way of listening. Now, yes, you can use AirPlay to play to it, which means that if you have an iOS device of some sort or a macOS device or tvOS device, then you can stream to it using those. But what happens when your Android-loving friend comes over and wants to, you know, play a podcast? That's whenever I'm like, well, I've got, you know, the Echo right there and you can play it over that. Or I've got this Bluetooth speaker right here. You can play. It's I don't like that. If I'm going to spend this much money on a device, and I'm talking about myself here as an enthusiast, if I'm going to spend that much money on a device, I want it to do more than just connect over AirPlay. Like I want it to be able to be the speaker that can be everything for me in the same way that Echo is. And yeah, let's talk about now the norms, you know, the again, my siblings or my family members. There's no way. There's no way they would buy a HomePod. And, you know, I mean, I don't come from any sort of like lower middle class at most. And so like that it's already kind of out of price range for members of my family. But in general, like that kind of thing, there would be no benefit, I guess, for them. This is really being marketed as, you know, someone who would also be into a Sonos device. It's premium quality sound. And it also happens to have Siri. They kind of whispered on stage. And it can connect with AirPlay, and those are the things that it does, and apparently it'll do them well, and we'll see more. But yeah, I'm overall pretty disappointed in what it ended up being, simply because it doesn't compare in my mind to what Amazon and Google are offering in terms of the in-home hub that can be your friend as much as it can be your music listening device.
So here's the argument that I've heard in support of HomePod as a speaker first and as a sort of a smart home device second. And that is that Siri is just not that robust. You know, Siri's improved considerably over the years, but it's just not as intelligent. It doesn't do as much. It doesn't plug into as much as Google Assistant or even Echo. And that marketing it as a smart home speaker like the Echo or the Home would not be in Apple's best interest because it just can't compete in terms of that integration. So focusing on music, which is something that Apple has done so well since the iPod, and even before then, it's been so much a part of Apple's culture, plus the fact that it also has Siri, you know, that kind of thing. That is I mean, if you're going to sell a $400 speaker, it may as well be a damn good speaker, right? Mm-hmm. You know, what do you think of that?
It better be that first.
Right.
I think that they built a good product, and I don't even complain about the price. I haven't heard one, of course, but I've spent more than that on speakers. They're not cheap. Good ones, they're not cheap. But they built some product that there's no real market for. Anybody that wants high-quality audio bad enough to spend $400 and $500 on speakers is not going to buy a HomePod to do that. They would only want a HomePod because of the smart integration. So I think that you're probably right, Daniel, but I don't think that was the best course of action.
I mean, there's the other thing too, is that Apple TV is a smart home hub to some extent, but having a HomePod allows you to have an always listening speaker that can take over from the, you know, Hey Siri connectivity. And well, very few people are going to have iPhones or whatever. Hey Siri. So that, like, that thing is, you know, not everybody uses that on an iPhone. So, or at least not to my knowledge. Like, I don't think Hey Siri is as ubiquitous as, you know, OKG or, you know, or A. I'm terrified of saying those words. It's like, I'm actually traumatized by the number of times I've woken. Like, people have messaged me and been like, hey, a-hole, you made my Echo go off during your podcast like 6 times last night. And I was like, I'm sorry. Like, it's not my fault they don't have anything before the word of the actual product.
Hey, Daniel, so on maybe another podcast,
mute it. Hey, Daniel?
Exactly.
Alexa.
On another podcast I do, we solved it by naming them after pop stars. So it's Aguilera, it's Spears, and it's Gaga. And the people who listen to our show know what each of the three of those mean.
Okay,
and,
Gaga.
We're able to just get away with it that way. But I'm
I
not
do
sure
like
that,
that,
that's
that
the
Google
audience.
Is associated with this with the best person of that list, in my opinion. I love some Gaga, so.
Can Bixby be like Axl Rose?
Sure, yeah.
Pat Benatar. I don't know. What's a good... I'm like,
well,
drawing a blank
Beyonce
here.
Well, obviously Beyonce is who it would be for me. Bixby.
No, there's no... Nothing comes close to... Bixby's like Boris something. Like,
oh,
no,
I see. We're having
doesn't
to make
come
it
close
like,
to Beyonce.
That's true. It's not a great smart assistant, so we don't want to... Give it such
no, you
a,
don't
a
want to give it that much credit. Anyway, so let's wrap up a little bit. The conclusion here is that I think Apple is well on its way to getting better at this, but it's nowhere near as intelligent. Siri and HomePod doesn't seem like it'll be as intelligent as Google Home or Alexa, it's still not even in the same market. Between Google Home and the Echo, it's kind of a toss-up, right, Phil? I mean, you recommend Google Home, but you have every Echo there is, and it sounds like you use all of them all the time.
It kind of depends on what I'm doing and where I am. And it's funny, you can hear me in videos be like, hey, Alexa, or okay, Alexa. And like I totally forget which one I'm talking to. Oh, quiet over there, you. So we were editing the Echo Show review the past week, and just I've driven myself nuts with that. So I feel your pain, podcast listeners. I do it to myself.
So I mean, I do the same thing. Like when I have a Google Home in my kitchen, and I listen to Daily Briefing, and then I have an Echo in my living room, and then I have a Google Home upstairs in my office. But every time I want to turn on the lights to my office, I say, Alexa, turn on the lights. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm so sorry. And it just like it's so frustrating. So yeah, I agree. I think if you are going to invest in one and you haven't already bought a million Echoes, I think Google Home is the right move for you.
Did you see my little tweet storm the other night as I was going to bed?
No. Tell us.
I wanted to turn my thermostat down and I didn't want to have to get up. And the only way to do that would be to talk to one of these devices that was sitting there next to me. But one of them has a perfectly good touchscreen that I couldn't use to do it. Or I couldn't turn the lights off with it. Or
what thermostat do you use that you can't control with the app?
Well, that wasn't the point. The point was I wanted to use...
I'm sorry.
Yeah, he's just that lazy.
Yes, that was also included in the tweet storm. But yeah, it's so good until it's not.
And I think so that's why, you know, I think now as I'm listening to you gents talk about how, you know, you get frustrated because you end up saying the wrong thing in the wrong place on in life. And also whenever you're talking to those assistants, that I think that may be why, you know, we're having a bit of therapy here. That might be why I ended up just going back to tapping in my phone. And that is one of the good things about Apple's implementation here is that there's one app. And I can go in that app and all of my stuff is there and I can make adjustments there. So I could have, and I know that that's not what you wanted to do in that situation, but like from my bed, I could have just opened up that one app. And after I tapped to turn off the lights, I could also adjust the thermostat and not have to worry about, you know, popping into a bunch of different apps. So I want
We talked about that while you had disappeared. I mean, of all the things I have, I think I only have like two that work directly with HomeKit. And so you're totally right. If you want to live within HomeKit, you want to use HomeKit, buy HomeKit stuff, period. Full stop.
I hope that Google does that as well. I'd love to see you know, the Google Home app eventually include some controls built in where they could integrate those different things. Because, you know, for some people, for whatever reason, they might not be able to use their voice in a situation or might not want to, or like if you're in your kid's room and the kid has just fallen to sleep and you need to get that light turned off and blah, 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 blah. There are plenty of reasons why someone might want to just, you know, tap to
you
do multiple things.
Walk over and turn the switch off.
Oh, come on. We're living in the future, Jerry.
No, I make them do it.
I thought
that's
you
like
to touch
them.
Things.
that's true. That's true.
So, all right. So yeah, I mean, this is for some people, these are problems in search of solutions. And for others, they're solutions in search of problems. Like there are people that actually need these things. And there are people who just buy them kind of maybe like us just because we want them. And then we can't actually figure out what makes them that useful. The biggest thing for me is I want to be able to turn off all the lights in my house physically and still be able to use my voice to turn on the Philips Hue. I mean, that is a problem that I have not solved for myself yet, because that would involve either replacing all the light switches with dimmers that are compatible with Philips, or putting one of their pseudo light switch remote controls next to every single actual light switch that has a Philips Hue in the room. And these are the kinds of things that I think a lot of people are tackling, right? It's the where the real world butts up against the digital, where the smart butts up against the analog. And how much of an investment do you actually want to make in this? Do you go all in, or do you just sort of, you know, stay in the shallow end and just play around for a bit?
Yeah.
Start slow, work your way up. I mean, $50 Echo Dot and $60-$70 for the starter pack of Philips Hue, just the white bulbs. I mean, that'll get you going. That'll get you deciding how much you like it and how far you want to go. I mean, you want to do your whole house with that. That's great. I don't really want to do my whole house with that because I'm not in I'm not in every room all the time. And so I've strategically, like, I've got them in my bedroom and I've got them in the living room. And right now that's good enough.
almost all of the switches in my home have been replaced, like in-wall switches have been replaced with HomeKit-enabled in-wall switches. And that, what you're talking about, Daniel, like they're expensive, but that's exactly what would solve your problem, because I can go up to my office overhead light and, you know, hit the switch on the wall and it'll turn it off, but it's still going to work then afterward with HomeKit or whatever device I happen to use, because the power is still there at the thing. And yes, if you have, you know, Philips Hue in your overhead lights, then you have to tell everybody in your house, hey, don't flip off that switch, because if you do, then I can't control this light anymore. So that's the beauty of these in-wall switches. Now, you have to be able to know how to, you know, play with, well, not play is not the right word. You have to know how to be able to wire these things, and you have to have permission if you rent your place or what have you. But I also happen to have a guide on how to install these as well that you can totally check out. And between the Elgato makes an Eve light switch that's Bluetooth LE, and I have a couple of those. And then my favorite in-wall set comes from Lutron, and they make the Lutron Caseta line, and it uses a hub. And you can get several at a time, and you can get dimmers, or you can just get on and off switches. And I have those in most places around the rest of the house. And so you tap one button to turn the lights on, tap one to turn it off, and then there's a dimmer in between. And then it's all controllable and configurable with HomeKit, or if you choose to use Alexa, oh, doggone it, I just said it, or Google Home or what have you. All of those work, and it's pretty incredible little system there. And that's, I think, the perfect marrying of the two, where I don't have to tell my guests, no, don't touch that. They could just know that it works. And one last thing that I would recommend, if you do get Philips Hue sets, absolutely go now and buy one of those motion sensors made by Philips Hue, because I kid you not, it is one of the most reliable and responsive home automation technologies that I have ever come across. It works every time in the dark. It could be, you know, as dark as, I don't know, it could be super dark. It can be, you know, normal lighting. It works every time. It's incredible. And I have it for our hallway light, and you can configure it to where, like, after a certain time, it only turns on the light barely, as opposed to all the way. And during the day, it does the whole way. And so a person doesn't even think to have to touch the switch on the wall, because the sensor has already seen them and turned on the light for you. It's great.
Okay, I'm ordering that right now.
That is genius. And actually that solves a big problem that I have with Philips. You know, in that you don't, if I don't want to buy a bunch of these remotes, I can still rely on the light switch when I want it, or I could just leave the light on all the time and use these motion hubs.
They're so good. They really, I mean, genuinely, one of my favorite things that Philips makes, and all it is a motion sensor. And a hidden secret, they also happen to have a temperature sensor inside, as well as one more thing, but I can't remember what it is. But they're not accessible
laser?
Right
is
now.
Is it a laser?
Yeah, it's a laser. It's a, yeah, it's absolutely a laser. But there's a temperature sensor inside that in hopefully future firmware updates we'll be able to make use of.
Interesting.
I was really going to make a joke about buying oil lamps off Amazon, but I'm actually buying the motion sensor right now.
Yes. I really think they're incredible. I probably have a review on that as well, because I'm gung-ho about it. It's great.
Well, one thing I want to mention here is that I've basically done the same thing as Micah. Every outlet and switch in my house is Wemo enabled. And I went with Wemo because I know the APIs fairly well and can do things with Raspberry Pis
nice.
That Siri or Google Home can't do yet. But I don't have to try to wheel myself up the stairs or go into the kitchen or go somewhere that hurts or physically unable to get to turn the light on or check, you know, anything.
Oh, accessibility is huge with all this stuff. Yeah, like, we didn't even touch on that.
I can do it from my phone, or I can do it from my computer. My computer is Google Assistant enabled, and that is, it's great for me. But I also know some people that this would be absolutely essential for and be life-changing. To me, it's just a convenience thing. But the potential is there to make products for, you know, anybody with any type of mobility needs just amazing.
I'm really glad you touched on that, Jerry, because one of the things that I've used in the past is Homebridge. With a little Raspberry Pi server to run it. And Homebridge basically takes non-HomeKit-enabled devices and makes them HomeKit-enabled by using your computer, in that case, the Raspberry Pi, as the HomeKit-enabled hub. And so it's as if, you know, you've got like a Philips Hue hub that can then connect to all of the non-HomeKit-enabled devices, and that serves as the point of connection. And so it shows up in your home app for iOS, and you can use that, and then also can control it with Siri. And so I love that, you know, there are these different individuals and groups of people who are coming together to like make this stuff more accessible for everybody. But then on top of that, it does go that step farther, and we get to see how this technology can indeed improve people's lives. And I think it was just recently that Apple had done a story on a man who was quadriplegic and was a, or a quadriplegic man who was able to run his small business from home and used HomeKit-enabled technology to, you know, kind of be able to get around his house and reclaim some independence. So all this stuff is really awesome for more than just like, ooh, look, I can turn on and off my light with my voice.
And we've just touched the surface. I mean, you when you start getting into doing your own programming and automation that can tie into these things, I've got a low power infrared laser on my porch that's beamed to my mailbox. When my mailman opens the thing, I get an email.
That's awesome.
Because it's difficult for me to go get my mail. A lot of days I don't get any mail. I want to know when he came, and you know, that way I can decide if today I feel like going way out there to get my mail or not, or let it wait for my wife to come home. But in any case, I know when he arrived. I know that he put something in the mailbox. Nobody makes anything like that because the use case is, you know, no, not very many people would buy it. But you can do it. And when we finally get a consumer product that doesn't require me to sit here and write scripts in Perl to do this kind of stuff, where maybe you can just plug different things in and they automatically work together, it will change, and we'll be able to do much more than, you know, limit ourselves to devices that work with what we have.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to hit you up on that, because I've been wanting to. I was like, can I put a Bluetooth contact sensor? Will that be too far away from the mailbox? I've been wanting to do that too, because we've had mail theft in my neighborhood before, which is ridiculous because people don't know that's a felony offense. But anyway, if I had that laser, then I'd know, okay, got to go get the mail.
All right, well, that is a really good place to end today, because I think, you know, we've basically run the gamut. We've touched on the privilege, we've touched on the the kind of mainstream use cases, and we've touched on the fact that these devices, these ecosystems, these platforms can actually truthfully be, if not life-changing, then at least life-improving for people who really, really need it. So we'll leave it there. Thank you so much, Micah and Phil, for joining us today. Micah, where can people find you when they want to learn more about you? When? Because I know they will.
Well, if you're looking for anything that I do online, you can go to, and no, this is not a joke, you can go to www.chihuahua.coffee, where you will find links to all of the things that I do.
I love it. I've been there. It's amazing. And Phil, Modern Dad, how are you doing? Where can people find you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm good.
I got to think about that. Where should I should build out the Modern Dad webpage a little more, because my stuff is kind of still sprayed everywhere, right? The main thing is still youtube.com/modern. But I still hijack your websites every now and then. So Android Central, there's some stuff on there. It was nice writing a full like Echo Show review again, pumping 3,500 words onto AC and not killing it in the process.
Well, we're glad you did, because it's a great review. And if you haven't read it, check out Android Central. Search, don't search Android Central, because it doesn't work. But search Google for Amazon Echo Show review, and we should be on page one. If we're not, I'm going to have to talk to somebody.
Or if you have an Echo Show, you can say, Alexa, show me Modern Dad on YouTube. Greg got it. Greg's over. Didn't get it in time.
It failed. Jerry, while Phil's flailing in the background, where can people find you?
I'm not at chihuahua.bigfoot.com or whatever. But I don't know. I guess if you want to look for me online, the best place is Twitter, because I can only manage one social network at a time. I am inept when it comes to that. Just, it's at GB Hill on Twitter. I don't do DMs, but you can just say my name. I do read through all those, even if it takes me longer than I would like.
All right. Well, hit him up. And you still have an Instagram account that you leave barren.
It's still there. It's just, I got to figure out how I can manage. I get distracted.
Give us a tour. Use Instagram to give us a tour of your smart home. That's what I'd like to see.
Okay.
I would totally look at all your smart home projects. Like,
I would love that.
I'm still thinking about that mailbox one. Like, I need that.
All right. Well, my name is Daniel Bader. You can find me at JourneyDan on Twitter. I got retweeted by MKBHD this morning, so don't tweet me for the next couple hours, because my notifications got blown up. It's been an interesting day. People are very passionate about telling me that I'm wrong.
are you wrong about now?
Go to Twitter and find out. You can find all of our work at imore.com, androidcentral.com. We're all part of the Mobile Nations family. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we will see you next week.